Guys, did you know today is Star Trek Day?
What?
Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means?
I don't.
No idea.
I didn't know this until today. So Star Trek Day is, it's the anniversary of the original Star Trek series premiering on TV today.
What anniversary?
51 years ago.
51 years.
Yes.
Wow. If only we did this a year ago, that would be like a big deal.
That would be great.
And if only Star Trek Discovery launched today.
Ah, see.
The symmetry would have been perfect.
Maybe we'll get into that a little bit. But hey, you're listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. It's Stardate 95290.26. Yes.
We're using Stardates.
That is accurate. I looked it up.
And I was worried that I was going to be too nerdy on this podcast.
This is a new Star Trek podcast from Permanent Record, and we're starting out by covering every episode of Star Trek Discovery, the first new Star Trek TV show in 12 years. Let's go around and introduce ourselves. My name's Mike.
My name's Clyde.
Grant.
Ashley.
And today we're going to offer our first impressions on Discovery based on the few trailers. I hope you guys watch the trailers. We all have different varying kind of love and knowledge for Star Trek. So I kind of wanted to start out with like asking you guys or getting a feel for your knowledge of Star Trek and your love. Because you're on a Star Trek podcast, so everybody here loves it, right?
Well, let's start off with you, Mike.
All right.
What is your knowledge and familiarity with Trek?
Well, I'm a fan. I'm a big fan. That being said, I'm a fan of what I like. So I love most of the original series, most of the movies, TNG, DS9, especially DS9, maybe 4 episodes of Voyager, maybe no episodes of Enterprise. It's I don't know.
We just lost one listener.
Yes.
He's like, only Enterprise.
Yeah. I'm not the kind of fan who will dress up as a Klingon or anything.
Why not?
Borgs. Only Borgs.
Only Borgs. Yeah.
He's got a thing for Borgs.
It's Ferengi.
Should he have a pretty sweet Borg costume?
My wife's here. You can ask her. I will not confirm nor deny.
Resistance is futile.
I am the kind of fan who will pay money to see William Shatner speak in public, which I've done a couple times. I don't know. I kind of like the show. Maybe DS9 is my favorite, but the reason I like the show is really because of its the philosophy of Trek, right? Which is what? It's about progressive social values, right? It's about striving to be something better than you are. And it sounds cheesy and it sounds corny, but it wasn't cheesy and corny when I first got into the show, which was when I was a kid. And I saw these guys flying through space and aspiring to be something better than they were and aspiring to help people and aspiring to, well, I'm going to say discover, right? Explore.
I see what you did there.
That was actually not okay.
No.
Reading a written out speech.
We heard it.
Incorrect.
But I love it. I love Star Trek. So, what about you, Clyde?
I look at myself as a second generation Trekkie, right? So my mom is a huge the original series fan. So I remember it being on in my house. Just she's watching it all the time. So I remember thinking, what is this? Shatner seems a little bit corny to me, but it was interesting. Like, I'd watch it. It wasn't like I'd run out of the room. But when TNG came on, like when that launched, I was so in. I've seen probably every episode, I'd say probably about 3 times. I love TNG. I'm a big space opera sci-fi fan in general. So for me, my favorite Trek shows are the ones where you have a spaceship doing spaceship stuff. So for me, the transition to DS9 was really, really rough because that was like a space station and everything was happening.
But it's so good. It's like proto Battlestar Galactica, but go ahead.
You know what? And it's interesting because you would think, as a black guy, I would naturally gravitate towards Sisko. Not so much. He's not really my favorite, like, captain. And so I watched DS9 a little bit. Voyager, I got into and then got out, but then came back and rewatched it and kind of dug it.
Voyager's good when you're like really drunk.
I'll also say this. I have read a number of novels, particularly the Titan series, and that renewed my interest in a bunch of stuff because in Titan, which is a story of kind of Will Riker's, his own ship, and it brings in a number of other characters, particularly from like DS9 and Voyager, I got interested in that. And so you kind of go back and then you start watching it and you see it different when you've been following, like, you know, some of these characters around. So I like those. I watched the first season of Enterprise, mainly because I'm a huge Scott Bakula fan and T'Pol's kind of hot. So that was it.
You read Riker novels.
Yeah, about six or seven.
Or seven novels about Riker.
Pretty much. He wasn't the only one there. You've got...
All about Riker.
It wasn't all about Riker. It's about Riker as captain.
Just Riker biography.
Yes.
How many chairs does Riker step over in six novels of Riker?
The whole novel.
This is a whole novel.
There's one novel called Stepping Over Chairs. It's not my favorite.
How to fine-tune your technique.
Yeah.
Okay. How to guide.
You are now the expert.
No.
Of Riker.
So, yes, I have read, like, the Wikipedia pages, the Memory Alpha and stuff like that, because I'm kind of curious. But I wouldn't call myself an expert. Like you said, I'm not really a Comic-Con guy. I don't dress up.
Do you speak other languages?
Nope, I do not speak Klingon.
Okay.
That's disappointing.
I know.
Ashley.
Yeah, so I guess I'm mostly an STNG fan as well. That's really what I watched first. So I think by default, Picard is my favorite captain. I do like costumes and am currently in the process of making a, strangely enough, Kirk costume, which I will be wearing to Troll the Renfest in a few months. So that's a bonus.
Love that.
Yeah, I've also recruited myself a Spock and a Bones. So we're going to do that.
But I'm not being your Uhura.
That's
nope,
fair.
Not gonna happen.
Sulu?
Nope.
You say it now, but...
Scotty? Will you be Scotty? No. You'd make a good Scotty.
This whole podcast is just a plan to get you to dress up as Uhura, okay?
Yes, no. Go-go boots, it's not happening.
Yeah, so I think I've seen like basically the first season of the original series. I enjoy it for what it is, but as far as like watching a show because I'm kind of into the story and really into the characters, I really love Data and Geordi's relationship. They're my favorite characters kind of overall across any of the series. There's an STNG episode, Data's Day, or it's like a day in the life of Data or something. Yeah. And I think that's probably my all-time favorite STNG. I love the conversations he has with Worf and how Data kind of sees that him and Worf are both these kind of outsiders trying to exist in human life. And they're trying to, like, I believe, pick out a wedding present for one of their friends and, you know, bumbling through that. And so I think the interpersonal relationships between Worf, Data, and Geordi that really sold me on STNG. I found it late in life, so I guess I know it's kind of cheesy, and I was an adult, you know, post-college when I really started watching it, and I still loved it. Being a dork, I love, you know, I love post-apocalyptic things, like horror things. It was so refreshing to see a positive outlook in a sci-fi that it really just kind of won me over, like this kind of outlook that we are moving forward.
That's the great thing about it.
It is. It's so fabulous.
That's the great thing about it. I feel like it's a great idea. Like in the future, we've given up our capitalist roots, right? We've just thrown them away for the pursuit of something greater, knowledge, right? Just the idea of that and the show always being about that or rooted in that. Like what other property that's spanned 50 years is really about that when you get down to the core of it? It's sounds corny, but it's really special.
Yeah. And, you know, right now I feel like, you know, you have not so many people, but a lot of, you know, Elon Musk and Gates and people kind of talking about the dangers of AI and what will happen when, you know, robots kind of take over everybody's jobs. And now we don't have this like scarcity based economy. It's cool to have this fantasy world that actually sees that as a positive, that like people aren't lazy. If people didn't have to be, you know, tied down with these sort of daily problems, they could do whatever they wanted. And I like that world. I think it's fabulous.
I think we're getting close to living in that world. I mean, when you think of Alexa and Siri and Majel Barrett, I mean, they're really close. Being able to like
it's true.
Ask a question in the middle of it.
I think that if I could reprogram Alexa and Siri to have the voice in the original series of the computer, that I might use them more regularly.
That would be amazing.
Why is that not an option?
It is a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Grant's eyes glaze over.
Oh, is that my cue?
That's your cue.
What's your favorite episode, Grant?
Yeah, so I'm on this podcast because I don't know anything about Star Trek. I know a little bit. I know the basics. I can name a couple of the captains. I can name Kirk and Picard.
Is that because we just said them?
Yes.
I knew it.
Well, here's a good example. Yesterday, Ashley and I were recording another podcast, and someone asked a question with the acronym TNG in it, and I did not know what that meant. I had to go, wait, what's TNG? And everyone went, we're doing a Star Trek podcast tomorrow. What's wrong with you?
The Next Generation. You know, I thought when, just not to cut you off, but, you know, the new show is Star Trek Discovery. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, cool, STD?
Don't do it. Don't do it.
But right away, CBS was fast with a press release. Call it DSC. DSC. Star Trek DSC. All right. DSC.
You know, it's a little ironic, too, because that's like the one thing that your average Trekkie doesn't need to worry about getting. See what I did there?
We have an audience to engage here.
Oh, right. I was throwing myself in there.
But they know it's true. They know it's true. It's funny, but hurts too.
A thousand single tears all at once. Yes. Just now.
One from each of us.
and you know, I have to say, it's not true. I mean, they do worry about that just with other Trekkies.
That's actually a really good point.
Yeah.
I mean, Comic-Con, great place to hook up. Just saying. That's true. Not that I know.
That is an incredibly outmoded and sexist attitude.
I want to continue this talk about Star Trek sex, but Grant.
Yes. So I haven't seen any of the TV shows.
Really?
I can name them. That's about it. I think I remember some stuff about the holodeck in TNG and watching it on UPN occasionally, but not really ever finishing an episode. It never really held my interest. I was much... And back in the day, it used to be you're in the Star Trek camp or the Star Wars camp, and I suppose I was in the Star Wars camp. That said, I did see the rebooted movies, the Abrams movies, I suppose they're being called.
Kelvinverse.
Okay, that's interesting. I liked the first one, and the other two are not good films in my book. And of the original movies, I... saw a little bit of the one with the whale. That's the fourth one.
Yeah.
Like Whales Go Home or something like that.
Star Trek 4, Whales Go Home.
Star Trek 4, Free Willy.
Free Willy, yeah, okay. I saw a little bit of that one because I just distinctly remember the clear metal. What a cool concept.
Yeah.
And Scotty talking into a mouse. That was kind of funny. And then I've seen Wrath of Khan, but here's the thing. I saw it at a local mock, what do they call those?
Master Pancake.
Well,
it's a mock of a show where they watch it. It's based on Mystery Science Theater.
It's like
basically.
It's like a live Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, where they make jokes about.
Yeah, so I saw it at basically a live Mystery Science Theater here in Austin, and that doesn't feel like the proper way to watch that movie because I was watching the plot and then just having them tear into every little aspect of it and make fun of it at the same time. So I'm like, I don't really know what's going on, but I'm very amused.
Yeah.
So I'm coming into this fresh. I'm very interested. At the end of this episode, I will have some questions for you guys that maybe you can answer for me.
All right.
Oh, like a newborn babe.
Yeah.
Just reborn,
that comes
fresh
out of the womb with questions.
I'm basically picturing that SNL where Will Ferrell comes out, his mom gives birth to a dude. Except instead of Will Ferrell nude, it's you.
Yeah. It's. I should have worn clothes to our podcast.
Or at least told me that was going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Fine.
That's why we're doing audio.
And we will assimilate you, Grant. Do you know what that means?
I imagine the Borgs are the ones that say assimilate, right?
The Borgs.
Is it not? I don't know if that's a joke. I don't know.
It's singular Borg.
Hang on,
singular
guys. Borg. Watch Borg. This. And what does the Borg fly around in?
A cube. It's a Borg cube.
Wow, you trained him so well.
I know.
I learned something yesterday. They fly around in a big hollow disk cube from the 90s, I'm guessing. That was very on trend then, with circuitry on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And they say assimilate because they're all like a hive mind thing. I'm guessing it's kind of similar to the buggers in like Ender's Game or something like that.
Well, it turns out that you can go over a few facts about the Borg and the time it takes you to realize that all the local bars are closed, which is how we covered this yesterday.
Yeah, we were bar hunting.
Well, let's talk about our goals for this pod. Obviously, we're going to cover Star Trek Discovery, but I mean, my goal for this podcast is just to get together and definitely talk about Discovery. But what do you guys want to get out of this podcast?
You know, I just want to talk about what has the potential to be a great show, maybe, or not great show. We'll see. And talk about it with people like you guys who are on this journey with me, and then hopefully our listeners, to really get in and catch all of those Easter eggs that might be there.
I want to discover something about myself. This is Star Trek Grant's Discovery. That's what I'm calling this.
Keep your hands on the table.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. I also hope to discover something about myself.
That's my answer. Get out of here, Ashley.
I think we're going to have to drink every time someone says the word discover.
Yeah, that's a good drinking game. That's something for you to play at home. Yeah, you know, when you're into the kind of things I'm into, you kind of have to sometimes find your community. And so I'm really hoping that that's something that we can do is, you know, we're watching the show. I have really high hopes for it. I hope it's as awesome as I want it, as I'm hoping it is. And I hope you guys really like it and that this becomes a place where we can talk about that. And in the off chance that you're going to troll your local RenFest dressed as a Star Trek character, you'll post photos for us so that we can see your great outfits.
What is your Instagram, Ashley?
I think I'm at Squiddy.
Okay. Okay, good. When is his Ren Fair?
I think we're going in November. It's technically Barbarian Weekend.
Okay, listeners, take note. At Squiddy, Instagram, Star Trek cosplay at the Ren Fair. That'll be good.
Hashtag I'm real popular. And I was in high school, too. I was real popular in high school.
Well, in all my podcasts that I do, I definitely talk about shows that I like and franchises that I like, but I never shy away from taking a critical eye to those shows. And sometimes people don't like that, but that's what's going to happen here with Discovery. Because, I mean, we have to be honest about the show, right? We can't just heap praise upon it and praise upon it. So I'm not going to shy away from being critical about the show, but since I love this franchise so much, I also want to find a balance where I'm still celebrating it. So hopefully we can do that. I kind of feel negative about this show, guys.
There's a bunch of red flags about in the Discovery. About it, right?
Yeah.
Red alert. All hands to battle stations.
So I think a lot of us were really excited when we heard that Brian Fuller was going to be the showrunner of Discovery. Because, come on. What's your favorite Brian Fuller show?
I mean, I committed to doing this podcast because of Brian Fuller doing that. And then he bailed and I'm like, am I stuck doing a Discovery thing? I'm kidding. But Pushing Daisies is my favorite.
Okay. Hannibal for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Pushing Daisies, Hannibal, we don't even have to list the rest of its credits. If he had only done those, that is just like such original boundary pushing television.
American Gods right now.
American
that he's doing
Gods
over on
right
Stars
now.
Is bonkers.
You know, if he was doing this show, I would be crossing my fingers for like an Ian McShane playing the Klingon or something. Like that would be amazing. But yeah, I mean, I love American Gods. I'm glad it's on, but it's kind of what took him away from Star Trek. But there's a lot of conjecture out there over why Brian Fuller isn't a part of the show anymore. And part of it is because he really just wasn't turning scripts in on time. And that caused delay after delay. And the official line from CBS is that they parted ways amicably. But there was a Hollywood Reporter article a few days ago that some unknown sources said that he was basically fired. Because he was spending too much time with his other shows.
Okay. See, that would actually put me more at ease than it being a factor of he had a vision and they were fighting him on it. If it's a matter of him dropping the ball because he was trying to do two different things at once, he couldn't really balance his time.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a solid vision for what they want to do with the show. They have other people in place that can still kind of pick up and carry the torch on that. Then I'm still down to see what they can do here.
And the other people who picked up the torch are two writers that he has worked with in the past that he gave his blessing to and said, go ahead and take this over. And it was people who worked with him on Wonderfalls and Pushing Daisies, I think, which are great shows.
Okay.
And they came up with him. They've been his number ones for a long time. So that makes me feel better.
Everything that I've read, he seems to be an authentic Trekkie. I was hoping was going to bring a sense of history and honor to a franchise that we really love. So I was a little concerned. But like you said, if you've got his number ones who are in it, I'm hopeful. I'm the optimist, though.
And he's still credited as a co-creator. And a lot of the DNA he put into the show apparently is still alive and still there.
They couldn't scrub
they
that
could
out.
Not scrub it. No. You put a black light to it, it's, you know, it's all there.
Still there.
Yeah.
It's like a Motel 6.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in part, maybe it's a good thing that Brian Fuller had to step away, because that guy is known for a very distinctive style. And there could have been a little bit of a struggle between him wanting to put his vision ahead of the overall franchise's continued vision. Like, it kind of reminds me of Edgar Wright doing Ant-Man. And I'm still sad I didn't get to see Edgar Wright's Ant-Man. But if Edgar Wright was very intent on putting out his very distinct style, and that wouldn't really mesh with the rest of the MCU, I can understand why Disney and Marvel would kind of put their foot down and be like, look, we can't make this work. And maybe in a similar manner, Brian Fuller wanted to have inanimate objects talking to people all the time and corpses reanimating or whatever.
Well, I mean, I think you bring up an interesting point, because, you know, we're talking about things like Dead Like Me and Pushing Daisies and even American Gods. These aren't exactly blockbusters that span, you know, 7, 8, 9 seasons. And CBS they've got a lot riding on this franchise. I mean, this is supposed to be the thing that draws everyone under the sun to CBS All Access. And so if you've got something that is kind of neat and cool, but also kind of niche, and you're only bringing 12 people, then that's not really going to work, is it? I mean,
yeah,
they're gambling big on this.
And they were gambling big with Fuller to a certain extent, because he does have a great reputation with people who love Star Trek. He wrote some great episodes of DS9. He wrote, I guess, some great episodes of Voyager. I haven't seen a lot of Voyager, but he does have the fan cred, and apparently a lot of the fans like him. I like him. So on one hand, I'm a little disappointed that we won't get to see his vision, but I am confident that the series will stick to a lot of what I like about Star Trek. Have you guys seen the leads, Sonequa Martin-Green, show up on the talk show circuit lately?
A little bit. I've seen her a little bit.
Okay. She's kind of winning me over a lot, because not only is she just gorgeous and smart and really fun to watch and listen to, but she, and maybe this is CBS telling her to do this and getting the PR out there, but she is very much saying that Discovery is continuing the tradition of tackling present social issues in a sci-fi setting that Star Trek is known for, and definitely pushing that progressive, striving for something better philosophy and idea. And that is really what pulls the story and the show forward. And I think a lot of the Abrams movies didn't really do that. The third one kind of did a little bit, but it also spent, you know, a lot more time on Kirk doing wheelies on a motorcycle. So that that was
edgy,
different.
Very edgy.
Yeah. Martin Green really talks about how this is something that she feels we need right now with everything that's going on in our country. And I think you mentioned before, Mike, that's what Star Trek gives us. It happens at a time where we don't have the social issues that we do. There's no homeless, there's no racism, there's no poverty. Like, somehow we've evolved past that. And it's interesting to see how we got there. And so I think what she's presenting is, wow, here's something that can give you hope. And so it's a really fun message to hear. I'm kind of interested. And I think that she's a wonderful, a great pull, because she's going to come with a ton of fans in her own right from The Walking Dead. Like, there's going to be a ton of people who want to just kind of at least peek in. So how they start this series is going to be really important.
And how cool is it that we get the first black female lead in a Star Trek show? The first black female lead in a Star Trek show. Like, and she's not even the captain. It's a total different perspective shift. You know, this is a bit of a landmark thing. Even though, like, it does kind of seem like Star Trek's maybe now trailing behind other shows, because obviously there's lots of other shows with black female leads. But this is like a first-time deal with Star Trek. I think that's pretty great. And the show is rounded out by a very interesting cast. You got Michelle Yeoh as a captain. She's an Asian female captain.
I mean, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I was in when I saw she was cast. I was like, that's it.
Yeah. You have Anthony Rapp and Wilson Cruz from My So-Called Life. Ricky's back, guys. playing, I believe, a gay married couple on the show, which we've never had in Star Trek as far as the TV series are concerned. Right. I know Sulu in the films was presented as a gay character. But yeah, you know, This is hitting all my like nerdy progressive buttons.
Don't forget Dwight from The Office.
Yes. How do you guys feel about Rainn Wilson? Apparently he's only going to be in 2 or 3 episodes playing Harry Mudd.
So this is a character that was in the original series?
Yeah.
And he was... The original series takes place 10 years after Discovery, correct?
Right.
So this is a bit of a prequel, and so he's a younger version of whatever... What kind of dude was he? Is he like, is just like a black market salesman or something?
Yeah, he's kind of like a trickster, right?
Yeah, he's kind of a shady character, but not...
He's a grifter.
Super malicious, and he's... I wouldn't call him a bad guy.
They're like comedy episodes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you think they're going to probably flesh him out, give him a little bit more nuance?
Yeah, I mean...
According to wacky hijinks.
According to what the actor is saying, that this is going to be a really dark version of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, really threatening version of him, so...
I am fascinated by Rainn Wilson. I mean, I know he gets kind of typecast as Dwight, but his run on 6 Feet Under was fascinating. I liked what he was attempting in the very short-lived... Oh, shit, now I don't even remember the name of that other show.
Oh, the one where he was like a detective?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It began with an H. It was...
Not House?
No.
Because it was kind of like House, right? He was just a jerk.
It was, but he was like a detective.
Right.
Yeah. I think it was called Crotchety.
Yeah.
Old crotchety
detective. Well, based on the promos and trailers, guys, like Ashley, how do you feel about Discovery based on those trailers?
I guess for me, watching the trailer, I kind of took two things away. I'm really excited about the series. I'm trying not to get too excited because I also have some reservations, but I'm hoping it's really good. One thing I am a little concerned about is, so being an STNG fan, when I watch the original series, it's like, it's pretty campy, obviously. It's really campy. And so I get that, like, we're not going to do, you know, the Adam West Batman Dances, you know, original series campy version that was, you know, happening in, like, the 60s kind of a thing. But at the same time, I hope it doesn't kind of do what we saw the DC Universe do in movies, which is get really dark. I think that would be a mistake. And watching the trailer, I felt like almost... all danger. And usually when you watch a Star Trek trailer that really kind of like capture, like when I remember, you know, even the new movies coming out, when I was in the theater and watching the trailers for that, it's like there was the danger, but then also, you know, you see, you know, Spock or someone come in and there's this sense of like hope in it. And I don't know, I kind of felt like that was missing a little bit from the trailer.
I think so too.
So I hope it's not too dark. I think that would really kind of miss the point a little bit. The other thing I'm pretty excited about are the return of the Klingons. I'm interested in seeing how that allegory will play out. We obviously don't have to enumerate the many analogies I think would be appropriate in today's day and age, you know, to replace the Cold War kind of role that they had before. So I'm interested in seeing how that kind of political and social and racial kind of nationalist issue will play out with the Klingons today versus back then. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And I hope it's just balanced with the kind of optimism that we, I think, collectively love in Star Trek.
I think that's the concern that I have is that, you know, as a TNG fan myself, and even when you think about Voyager and DS9, I thought got a little bit dark with the Dominion, but for the most part, you start the episode and an hour later, you kind of know that they're going to resolve whatever issue they had. They're going to bring peace to whatever planet that they stumble across on. And there is this hope. The trailers that I've seen run more like the movies where it's dark. It's shot darker, right? It's action sequence. And Mike, you were talking about kind of the Kelvin verse movies. And they do have a different tone. The Kelvinverse movies could almost be directed, you know, by Jet Li almost. I mean, they have a certain kind of action.
Yeah.
It's all action where, I mean, you could put in like the Undiscovered Country and almost fall asleep, right? Like there's so much.
I think I did dialogue. That last Wednesday.
Yeah, like there's so much dialogue and political kind of evaluation that it kind of slow moves, but these movies are, you know, it's 10 minutes of Sulu and Kirk trying not to fall off a drill, like, yeah. So it's I'm wondering where we're going to come up in the balance between this with Discovery. Like, yeah, there're going to be some action pieces, but when you think about some of the other shows, they weren't action shows. They were drama shows.
They're about ideas, emotions.
Yes. A lot of it communicated through dialogue and, you know, Picard looking out the window in his ready room thinking, what are we going to do next? Like, it wasn't Riker, you know, running across the hull of the Enterprise in gravity boots. You know, it wasn't stuff like that every episode.
Although I would have watched that. And you've read about it.
I've read about it all the time. And I'm just kind of interested, based on what we've seen in the trailers are constantly moving. Like, there's no downtime. You know, and the Klingons look supremely bad, right? Like,
You don't like the design?
Like, bad as in a supervillain,
okay,
right? Like,
sure.
You're talking about...
Like, bad dudes,
like a villain that you're thinking, if I'm placing bets right now, I'm betting on the villain. Like, I haven't seen anything that shows me that you guys are going to stop him. And I don't know that in the other series, with the exception of maybe the Dominion and DS9, that I had that thought, right? Like, wow, these guys might win.
Yeah. Well, one other cool thing I think about STNG, kind of, so to your point about like the Klingons being the big bad in potentially Discovery, and, you know, it's, I think, wonderful to have this allegory, to have this kind of conversation about, you know, Trump's America. But one thing that's cool about STNG is that I kind of think humanity at that time in the early 90s, and probably still, quite frankly, we were the Ferengi. You know, that was us. And so the, you know, I'm doing air quotes, you know, bad guy was the bad part of us. And so it was this opportunity for us to kind of look at ourselves and say, you know, where am I, this, you know, selfish, kind of overly materialistic kind of person. And I've always thought that was really cool. It will be a little ironic if, kind of to your point, if they are the big bad, if we kind of create the sense of other, whereas, you know, usually in Star Trek, what's cool is that it can lead to some self-reflection and kind of finding the opportunities to improve in us, kind of a deal.
No, you're right. That's a really good point. And to your point, you're talking about the dialogue in original Star Trek. And a lot of times, some of it was cheesy, but a lot of the original Star Trek is like 90% dialogue, 10% space battle. But that dialogue is so, a lot of it is just so very compelling. The story, the characters, where they're going is compelling. So in these trailers, I'm seeing a lot of like beautiful looking action. I'm seeing some really expensive sets. Like, that stuff is mint. They spent a lot of money on this, and it looks like a film. It looks pretty damn good. But when the few snippets of dialogue we get and character interaction, it all seems to just really kind of stock dystopian sci-fi. Nothing really grabs me or fills me with any of that Star Trek hope, which I hope is just kind of a marketing technique to get the masses, but we'll see.
I mean, yeah, to what you're saying right there, I think putting too much stock in a trailer, that the intent is putting a marketing angle on what's going on in the story. I mean, like our good buddy Martin always says, trailers lie, but that's kind of their job.
Yeah.
They are intent on getting us in the seat in order to watch this project. And so if they want to present a particular aspect of this series, like the action-packed one, then they're going to tailor a particular trailer to hit on that. And, you know, they're doing this more and more with films and in TV shows where you'll have a couple different trailers. And each one will target a particular theme or mood that they're trying to get across for the audience.
Well, I'd also add that the trailer's not for us. I mean, it might be for you, Grant.
I thought it was awesome.
Well, I mean, if you're listening to us or you're standing here and you're saying, I have a favorite Star Trek show, or I have a favorite Star Trek episode, or I have a favorite Star Trek character. If you can say those things, then the minute that they said, we're doing Star Trek Discovery, you said to yourself, I'm watching it, right? You've also cleared out the $5 that's going to cost you, the $5.99 to pay for CBS All Access, and you said, I'm in. At least for a month, I'm going to watch this. Like, you've already made that decision.
You bought a lipstick account and started a podcast about it.
Right. Like you knew. But if you're on the fence and you're like, well, what is this thing that they're doing? Then they had to create something to get you to watch it. And, you know, having angry Klingons fight, you know, Sonequa Martin Green might do it.
Yeah, that's pretty compelling.
But the other aspect that you were also hitting on, Clyde, was that storytelling has evolved since the very episodic structure that, you know, I'm not very familiar with what was going on in TNG, but I can guess that it was story of the week, and everything, an episode would wrap up a story in an hour.
Most of the time, yeah.
And if there was a ongoing story arc, it wasn't contingent upon being carried through with character development within each episode. It might take a break for a couple episodes so they can just do a couple little one-offs. Yeah. And nowadays, you definitely can't have that. You need an ongoing arc for a season. So what we're given here in this trailer shows that arc. We're seeing the action-packed aspects of it. You're not going to be able to cut together a bunch of dialogue scenes that are going to be as riveting as the action sequences in a series of these trailers.
So do you think that we're looking at a 15-hour movie versus the episodic? Because, I mean, when you look at all of the other Star Trek properties, they have a certain episodic feel to them, mm-hmm. right? So I'm wondering, like you said, you know, storytelling has evolved.
Well, Star Trek has done both. I think I might be the only one here who really loves Deep Space Nine and watched it all. And that, I believe, in the third season and lasted seven seasons, became very serialized. Like, it just now, TV critics are starting to come and praise it for being one of the first nighttime TV dramas to tell a long-form, years-long story. Because it came out a little before Buffy the Vampire Slayer, definitely before Lost, and before Battlestar Galactica. And I think a lot of those shows owe a lot to DS9. So Star Trek has done that before, but it looks like this show is taking it to the nth degree, definitely telling a modern long-form story.
I would hope that Star Trek doesn't want to fall into a procedural camp.
No. That's definitely not what they're doing. All the press releases, all the ads, everything that the writers have been saying are saying we're going to get one long-form story, and the story might change in season two. They haven't been renewed for season two, but they already have a plan. So I don't know. Maybe we'll get a True Detective style long form movie, or a Bloodline style. Not Bloodline. Was that the Netflix show about the killer? Yeah. Long form movie. Or maybe we'll get something that's a little more, that mixes the long form story arc with the episodic, which is kind of what I would like more. I don't know. We'll see. But I am excited that they're moving Star Trek into some more, you know, modern territory, which is new and exciting.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I haven't seen it. What does throw me off is this is apparently 10 years in the past.
Yes.
And yet their costumes are looking a lot more modern design, slick. And
okay.
Though, that always happens. But I also hear that their uniforms are going to gradually evolve toward the TOS uniforms.
We need more color coding in our uniforms. We can't all be blue. I don't know who's the red person that should die.
But I'm also excited because
you know about the red shirts.
I do know about red shirts.
Yes. I think I'm also excited about the fact that it's ripe for a little bit of crossover. You know, when I think about things like Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, one of the things that really works for Better Call Saul is that you get these little pieces from the Breaking Bad universe that you love. And I think that if they choose to resist that's a mistake.
You just want to see Chris Pine walking down a hallway.
I do not want to see Chris Pine walking down the hall.
Well, actually, popping I think wheelies. In STNG, Kirk does tour the new Enterprise, doesn't he, in one of the early episodes?
No, that's McCoy.
That's McCoy.
Because he lives to be like 100. And Yeah, he did. And Scotty shows up on that, too.
But those are great kind of throwbacks.
There is definitely continuity here because Martin Green's character was raised by Spock's father. So she's kind of Spock's half-sister, stepsister. So she's not Vulcan. She's a human, but she was raised by the Vulcans. That's another thing about this show. It's supposed to be about her. And it's kind of a thing we've seen with Spock already, but this will be a different angle because it's a human person raised on Vulcan, not a half-human, half-Vulcan. Her arc is going to be figuring out her identity.
Embracing feelings.
Embracing feelings.
My understanding is that Vulcans are emotionally dead.
Yes.
They're very pragmatic about everything.
Very much so.
Which is interesting. I think I'm fascinated to see her character, because if you know anything about The Walking Dead, I mean, Sasha is a lot of emotion. And so it'll be interesting to see Martin Green's range and how they write this, because what I don't want to see is Sasha, you know, on the bridge of the Discovery, right? Like, that's not what I'm looking for. But I want to forget all about The Walking Dead and see
Me too.
Something
don't
new.
We all
and see something new, right? See her in something new. Yeah, and I liked her on The Walking Dead, so I'm excited to see her in this role, see what she can do with it. Okay, so I think a lot of us are cautiously optimistic about Discovery. I think you guys are like more like looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm super looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to it.
I mean, there's not another space opera on television right now, now that Dark Matter was canceled.
Oh, yeah. Leviathan Wakes? Or I'm sorry, it's Expanse.
It's Expanse.
Yeah.
I read the book, so I'm still a little like, I don't know about the show.
Riker's not in it.
No, he's not in it. there's no Worf. So, I mean, because this is going to be the show with a starship that's moving around, I'm really hoping it's something.
Okay.
Like, I'm optimistic.
So that's your one thing about being a fan. Like, it has to be in a star. Like, because a lot of the fans have their things that they latch onto. Like, if it doesn't have this, fuck this show, right?
They have their checklist.
Like, a lot of people are saying, I'm not going to watch this because it's a prequel, okay? I'm not going to watch this because the Klingons look different. None of that stuff bothers me at all. I just want a good story and good characters.
I need a well-written show. I need a cool ship. And there's got to be some technology that I go, oh, man, that is so cool. I wish I had that.
Right.
Like, who doesn't wish they had a holodeck?
I want the food replicator.
Holodeck. Like I said, who doesn't wish they had a holodeck?
I would just never leave there, and I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
Grant.
Yes.
You came here with a list of questions, Star Trek questions, burning Star Trek questions you want answered.
I do.
All right.
I have a series of questions here, guys. First one, this is a question for whoever wants to take it. Which of you knows the license plate numbers for the different Enterprise ships?
I do not.
Can you name even one of them?
No.
License plate?
I don't know what it is. Like an NC something or other.
NCC 1701 DE.
I think there's even an F.
A, B, C, D, and E.
Yeah.
Is that really true?
Yes.
Wait, you didn't write down the answer?
No, I didn't write down.
That's totally my PIN number.
Yeah. I'm not going to check stuff.
I mean, okay. it's for the original series and the Next Generation, I mean, it's all Enterprise, and they just kept adding letters.
Letters. Oh. Every time the ship changed, they just add a letter.
I thought it was going to be a little bit more complex than that.
No.
I mean, now you do have some others if you're talking about Voyager or the Runabout or things like that, but you know, for the most part.
License plate number was not the right term.
No, I had no idea what you were talking about there, buddy.
Those numbers are about as significant as the lost lottery numbers.
Oh, so very.
No.
That was like the entire show.
Sure.
Don't get on me on that. All right, my next question is, explain the differences between all of these guys. I'm not sure who's a bad guy, who's a good guy here. We have Romulans, Vulcans, these Worfs, Tribbles. There's some lizard dudes. There's these mega ear dudes I remember seeing like on DS9.
Ferengi.
Gorns. Those might be the lizard dudes. I'm not really sure.
Gorns. They're a thing.
Borgs, which I've just learned is actually Borg. who's bad? Who's good? Worf's Klingon, right? Weren't the Klingons, they're bad, but then later they're good?
Yeah. So I think the confusion is that the different properties are different phases. And so one kind of thing as not so much, you know, specifically for the story, but as a viewer, there's a lot of allegory going on with the bad characters for when those series came out at the time.
Yeah.
So with the original series, the Klingons are bad. And it's a little bit of a kind of Cold War situation. By the time you get to STNG, there has been a peace between, just sort of like it happened really, where they're not
the
besties.
The Ketamer Accords, right?
Yes, yeah, the Ketamer Accords. Yeah, so we're not super besties with them, just like we're not super besties with Russia in the 90s. But we do have an alliance and we work kind of together, probably even closer than in real life.
Now we're super tight with the
Russians. Oh, we're super tight now. Yeah. So tight. And so very much like the real world, it changes like that. So when STNG came out, so that's why Worf is one of the first, maybe the first Klingon to serve on a Federation ship. That's post the peace treaty between them. The Vulcans are a peaceful, like we're kind of super best friends, like we are with like England or something like that.
Switzerland.
Yeah. super besties with the Vulcans. The Romulans are kind of like, did you read Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
Okay, you know how like elves are like super good guys, but the wood elves are kind of like their weird redneck backwoods cousins?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of like the Romulans. They're an offshoot cousins of the Vulcans that were split from each other.
Okay.
And so one of the things that Ambassador Spock is doing in the films is trying to remind... Is that in the films or in STNG? I forget.
It's in TNG.
TNG. Okay, it's in TNG. Trying to remind the Romulans. Trying to remind the Romulans that actually they're the same people and that they can be together again. And so there is a very new Cold War kind of relationship between the Federation and the Romulans, where there is a no-fly zone set up called the Neutral Zone. And the Federation stays out of the Neutral Zone, supposedly, air quotes, just like we didn't go into Cambodia during Vietnam.
Even though they fly into the Neutral Zone every other
all the time.
All the time.
And the Romulans do too, but we all kind of... And there's a lot of escalation that always gets de-escalated before we kind of destroy each other. So they're kind of the big bad in STNG. So in this point, we're talking about the 90s.
Okay.
The Ferengi, the guys with the ears that you're talking about, they're my least favorite peoples, but they're the ones that I think are probably most representative of where humanity was before it moved into the Star Trek universe. They're very materialistic driven. They stab each other in the back. They can't be trusted. Their scientific expertise is just a hair below. It's not bad, but it's not as good as the Federation or the Romulans. They're out to make a dollar.
Yeah. Imagine capitalism with no bounds on
whatsoever.
It, right? And that's what you have with the Ferengi.
Their afterlife, their heaven is called the Divine Treasury. And you know you're dead because you're in the Divine Treasury and you have to buy a good afterlife for yourself.
But one thing that's interesting about the Ferengi is they have these...
Grant was like, I want to hear all about it.
But I know what dispensations are.
It's kind of interesting. They have these, the rules of acquisition.
Uh-huh.
And it's the ongoing joke is that there are all these rules, but no one ever knows. So you can just make up and say, the 45th rule of acquisition is that you have to give me all your money when I walk into a room. And so it's kind of an ongoing joke, but yeah.
Okay.
And they were often portrayed in the 90s, like the Romulans, as bad guys. But they're kind of bad guys you could easily outwit.
Yeah.
In Star Trek DS9, one of the main characters was a Ferengi, and that helped flesh out that role. And the great thing that Star Trek has always done is that they'll come up with these aliens that are archetypes of, just general, either literary or social archetypes. And the first few episodes that they're introduced, they're very one note. But as the series goes on, they develop more. And you see those races and those characters progress to where it's very satisfying. And they did that a lot with the Ferengis in DS9.
Okay.
So those are the big guys. And then when you talk about is it the Gorn? Is that how you say it?
Gorn.
The Gorn. The Gorn. So there's always these.
It's a space lizard.
Is that just like a little bit more like a primitive society? Is it little space lizards?
I don't even remember how they were fleshed out at all. All I remember is Kirk fighting one.
In the arena episode of the original series.
So they pop up in some of the books. And the thing to know about them is that they are they're a warrior race.
Yeah, but I mean, even in the arena episode, in this episode, this is the original series is when they come out. And they're a little bit more like they're always running into random kind of alien races that are varying degrees of, warrior peaceful. Kirk is in pursuit of them because they have destroyed basically like a base of theirs. And a more advanced alien race locks him and the Captain of the Gorn ship on a planet and makes them battle victory, and then they can go about their way. And Kirk is a little bit of a hothead, and he instantly just assumes these are a murdering race. Well, Spock and the people on the Enterprise start to do a little bit of research, and it sort of turns out that actually that space is very close to where the Gorn planet is. They're a warrior race. They felt like they were being invaded. And so even in episodes where they come across kind of, I don't want to say throwaway, but just not persisting characters, they will always have this kind of side where usually they were in some way.
Make them a little bit of a sympathetic enemy. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay, we can move on from there. I have more.
Very good. Very good.
Waxy fish dude who's on one of those shows who kind of looks like Eric Trump, but I don't know what that is.
I might have blocked that out. It was too horrifying.
Thank you for showing everyone who's listening exactly how deep our nerdom can go. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
I was just giving you guys a platform there. Okay, my next question is, can you guys at least explain to me the chronological order that these shows take place in? Because I'm guessing Enterprise happens before this?
Sure. Yeah, Enterprise is 100 years before Kirk. Okay. And then you have...
90 years before this.
Right. You have Discovery, which is 10 years before Kirk. Then you have the original series. Then you have The Next Generation. And then kind of along the same time or era as The Next Generation, you also have Deep Space Nine.
Which was a spinoff of TNG.
And then you have Voyager, which was a spinoff of TNG as well.
Oh, okay. So those are all happening around the same time.
Yeah, yes. Pretty much. Okay. Like, I believe DS9 debuted like maybe the fourth or fifth season of TNG. And then Voyager debuted like closer to the end of TNG's run.
Okay, so what's the deal with the different universes? Are there more than just one that you guys know of? Or
I don't know if you want to get into the mirror universe.
Yeah, are we going to get into like string theory?
I mean, you don't have to. I was just kind of curious. Like, there's the Abramsverse or whatever you guys called it,
Kelvin.
Kelvinverse. And then what's this one called?
Prime.
Prime?
Yeah, the Prime. And that's really all you need to know. Others.
Yeah, that's really it.
That's really it.
Oh, I misinterpreted the question. I thought he was asking if this is a multiverse world or a universe world. And I was like, oh, there's many. This is a multiverse world.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when they run out of ideas on how to tie up with a neat little bow the episode, the answer is a little bit like in, what was it, Superman 3, where you just like spin the earth backwards? Is that Superman 2?
Oh, I was going to say, call Richard Pryor?
Yeah, pretty much. they'll just go to a different universe where that never happened. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but I misunderstood the question. Sorry.
I can wrap this one up a little bit more concisely. Can you guys give me your favorite Star Trek series, your favorite captain, and your favorite just overall character?
Oh, wow. Who wants to go first?
I'll jump in. So my favorite series absolutely easily is The Next Generation.
Okay.
My favorite captain also is pretty easy is Picard. I mean, Picard is just, I mean, he's Sean Connery as cool. Like, just, I mean, he's the man. And then my favorite overall character easily is Geordi. And I mean, that's probably because I watched quite a bit of Reading Rainbow when I was a kid. And so LeVar Burton is the man. But yeah, that's probably why I became an engineer at one point.
I'm a huge fan of him. Doesn't mean I want to meet the man. That's a Community reference. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It was over anyone's head.
Yes, it is. It's been so long since I've seen Community.
Now you guys have the glazed eye.
That's true. Yeah. I guess I'll go. My favorite, what was it? Captain, ship, what?
And character.
Series, captain, character.
Series, captain, and character. Series has to be Deep Space Nine. Just because of the depth of that series, I think it did everything that you want from a Star Trek show, but it also added depth and long-form storytelling, which at that point is what the series needed. And I think it injected a lot of life into the series really well when it did that. Captain was the other one. Mm-hmm. And even though I love Sisko, he was the head of DS9. Has to be Picard, because that's the role that made Patrick Stewart a star. He was great in it. And really, I think he crafted that role to be one of just like, you see this man and you want to follow him. And what was the third?
Overall character.
You're going to say character. Odo, I know.
No, I do love Odo. I actually do love Odo, but it's going to be Worf. Because Worf started out as a one-note kind of joke character. He was just this guy who just wanted to get into brawls all the time and shoot everything. But then one of the great things I love about Star Trek is how it does grow and nurture those characters. By the time the end of that series came along, he was one of the main characters and had so much depth, so much popularity and depth that they moved him to DS9 and he became one of the central characters there. And he became a leader in his own right, to where I felt as much admiration and respect for that character as I did for Picard. And you would have never said that. No one would have ever said that in the first few seasons of TNG. So those are my favorites.
He was kind of an afterthought. And then when Tasha Yar exited the series, there was a space for him.
Yeah.
He said, what, Rip?
Rip.
Yes.
All right, Ashley, your turn.
Yeah, so I am also on the Picard bandwagon. I think for someone, you know, who isn't maybe a really into the Star Trek world yet, when you think about what a captain for Star Trek would be, I bet what you're picturing is Picard. Highly moral, highly ethical, very...
Competent.
Yeah, very competent. He knows about everything. Extremely compassionate. Does not fly off the handle. Like, a man of few words. Exactly what Mike said. Like, you would want to follow him. Just, like, classy as fuck. Like, that's definitely what he has going on.
I think that about Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would follow Patrick Stewart.
Oh, I would follow him anywhere, especially if he's in that lobster costume.
I mean, think about it. I mean, Picard and Professor X... pretty much the same person.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just...
He's I'm going to play this and write this for myself, okay? Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. So if you look at his character in X-Men and go, wow, that guy's got it. It's the same thing when he's Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, agreed.
Who's your favorite character overall?
My favorite character is Data.
Is this because you're a big science nerd?
I don't know. Maybe. So he has this. He has the same kind of. He plays the same kind of foil to the more emotional characters that, you know, Spock would in the original series. But unlike Spock, he's void of pretension because he's a blank slate. So as an android who is always just taking in what humanity is, he's void of judgment, void of pretension. He makes mistakes the way that like a child might and asks kind of funny questions, doesn't understand sarcasm at first, but then once he learns it, he attempts it himself as like, you know, a grown up in the human world. As a result, he, I really think it's kind of credit to Brent Spiner. Yep. Yeah, who does such a great job because he's often playing Data evolving as a robot. But the other thing that Data does is he wants to understand humanity, so he participates in all its activities, everything from learning to play the violin to studying acting, which he is the under the tutelage of Patrick Stewart. So Picard tries to teach him theater.
And he does Shakespeare.
Yeah, he does Shakespeare. Yeah. His favorite character when he goes to the holodeck to pretend to be a Sherlock Holmes. And so you get...
Those are great episodes.
They're great episodes where you have Brent Spiner playing Data, playing Sherlock Holmes. And so there's like layers to it. And from just a storytelling and kind of like the personal side of Star Trek, my second favorite character is Geordi. And the relationship between Data and Geordi is so great. And that's my favorite.
I'm actually reading a Star Trek novel right now.
See? And you make fun of me.
No. Not about Riker. It's about the Borgs.
The Borgs.
The Borgs.
But there's a great chapter in which, and you might want to read it. It's when...
Yeah, I'll check it out.
It's in which Data and Geordi are in the holodeck doing Don Quixote.
That's wonderful.
It's fantastic. All right.
Just you guys crack me up, especially with you making fun of my Borg thing. Like, because I'm like... Whatever.
fucking nerd.
15 episodes. Every episode.
Yes.
Yeah. What was the third question? I'm sorry.
You answered it.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Yeah.
I will say you guys all got that wrong because the correct answer was Enterprise, Scott Bakula, and Scott Bakula.
Oh,
because it's Scott Bakula, guys.
I mean, Scott Bakula, but he was so not Scott Bakula on that
show. Yeah. I mean,
he had no charisma.
He didn't have a lot to work with either. I mean,
you just opened up a can of whoop ass.
I never watched the show. I just love Quantum Leap.
Yes, me too.
So I feel like he just gets it grandfathered in. Anything else he does, he was in Quantum Leap.
He's great. Show's not good. And he was not good in it.
So he's great. He's not great in that.
Got right. That's the only thing he's not great in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all make mistakes. 100 floors of fright. They can't be winners.
There's got to be some weirdo Trekkie who's just like, you guys don't get it. Enterprise was the best.
There are many, I'm sure. There are many.
The comment section of this podcast is coming, my friend.
Yes. Oh, yeah?
We will hear from them.
And
They're the never nudes of the world.
And I'm glad you said that because, listener, as we wrap up, I want to let you know where you can find us. You can find us on Twitter at Star Trek Pod and StarTrekPod.com was available, so we snapped it up.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
I have no idea. So you can find us at StarTrekPod.com and subscribe to the podcast because we are going to be covering every episode of Star Trek Discovery. I think we'll also make room for other episodes about other Star Trek things because there's a lot.
Can we talk about the TNG episode where Geordi falls in love with the woman he hasn't met yet. It's like my favorite episode.
Oh, and then like two episodes later, he like meets her.
Yeah, it's really awkward. And she's like, "Who are you? And why are you so weird?"
Yes.
Oh my God. So this might be a Lady Trekkie thing, but so Geordi and Data are
terrible at love. Yeah.
So anytime they get a crush on a woman in the show. And a lot of times, and especially in the case of Data, the woman initiated, because he's oblivious, they both go into boyfriend programs that are horrible. And as a younger nerd, I remember my adorable nerd dudes I dated who were so great, and then they turned on their boyfriend program and creeped me the fuck out. Yeah, it was a real thing.
Yeah.
See, I think the reason why Star Trek appeals to a certain type of person is because when you watch that, you realize that you're watching yourself, right? And so when you look, when you think about Geordi seeing this person from afar, right? I mean, it happens today. You see somebody's Facebook account, and you're like, wow, they seem like a incredible person. Then when you meet them, you're creeping them out because you're like, oh, yeah, I like that too. And they're like, how do you know that, stalker?
I mean, I like that too, just how you liked that on your post 2 weeks ago. What?
Excuse me?
Just kidding.
I think that was my first interaction with all of you.
Yeah,
that's fair.
All of my interactions with you have been creepy, Mike.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
Oh, I thought you meant me creeping you out.
Oh, that too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes more sense. Yeah, you've never creeped me out.
100%. Okay, I like how I can just like start wrapping it up, and then all of a sudden there's a side conversation all about Geordi that just happens. This is great. I love this. This is why I'm starting a Star Trek podcast.
This is fantastic. I'm trying to fucking end the episode. It's great, guys. Just keep blabbing.
I love it. Let's talk about the Borgs.
Got him.
So we will be on Apple Podcasts very soon. And you can find us at StarTrekPod.com, at StarTrekPod. I think we're going to do this weekly. Shortly, we'll have an episode after every episode of Discovery. And of course, we are a Permanent Record podcast. That's our podcast network.
Permanent Record.
Somebody did it. Thank you. You can find us at permanentrcrd.com, along with tons of other TV show podcasts like the TV Dudes, like TV Pilot Watching, This Is Us with Key and Clyde, which is coming up pretty soon, Mr. Roboto. We have another one that we're going to launch soon, but we'll talk about that later. So, guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here, guys.
Again, StarTrekPod.com. Live long and prosper.
Also, make it so.
Engage.